Eve, smiling, plucked the apple, then laughed, sighed, and tasted it again. Strange such a pleasant, juicy thing on a forbidden tree should spring. But had she seen with clearer eyes, or had the serpent been less wise, she'd scarce have shown such little wit as to let Adam taste of it.
I'm Katie Ailes, and you're listening to Building Stories, a new podcast from Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. This series celebrates five women writers who lived at various points in their lives in Edinburgh and vitally contributed to literary culture across Scotland, the UK, and the world. The important work of these women has gone under-recognised, so in this podcast, we shine a light on their achievements. All of the authors featured in these podcasts were nominated to be recognised by Historic Environment Scotland's commemorative plaque scheme. Plaques for Rebecca West, Mary Brunton, and Christian Isabel Johnston were installed in spring 2022. In this episode, we celebrate the prolific 20th century writer Lady Margaret Sackville. Her remarkable career included writing poetry, drama, and children's stories, advocating ardently for nonviolence, and championing other writers, especially women. At the top of this episode, you heard her witty short poem, The Apple, published in her 1919 Selected Poems. Lady Margaret Sackville was born on Christmas Eve 1881 at 60 Grosvenor Street in Mayfair, London. She was the youngest of five children born to Reginald Windsor Sackville, the 7th Earl de la Warr, and the Honourable Constance Mary Elizabeth Bailey Cochrane, daughter of a baron. Needless to say, as a member of the aristocracy, Lady Margaret was born into considerable privilege. But as we will see, throughout her life, she frequently leveraged this power to advocate on behalf of other writers and political causes. Margaret's father, the Earl, was a clergyman who for two decades served as chaplain to Queen Victoria. His religious zeal influenced Margaret, who throughout her life was a devout Roman Catholic. Very little is known about Lady Margaret Sackville's early years, but we do know that she began writing poetry early on, from the age of six. When she was 16, she met the acclaimed poet and political writer Wilfred Scawen Blunt, who admired her work and served as a mentor to her. He encouraged Margaret to submit her work widely, so from her teenage years, she had poetry published in major periodicals, including The Spectator, The English Review, and The Nation. Wilfred's respect for Margaret's work is clear from his introduction to her Selected Poems of 1919.
Lady Margaret Sackville is the best, in my opinion, of our English poetesses, at least of the younger generation. Certainly, she is among the most interesting. She has written verse since she was 6 years old, and it has always been good verse.
Margaret was only 19 when her first book of poetry was published, entitled Floral Symphony, and from then on she was utterly prolific. Over her life, she published around 40 books, mostly volumes of poetry, but also plays, children's stories, and essays. In the early years of her career, Lady Margaret Sackville's poetry was very traditional in its styles and themes. It harkened back to lyric poetry, using classical poetic forms and structures, rhyme and meter. She wrote about broad, romantic concepts, nature, love, death, and often referenced figures in Greek and Celtic mythology. For instance, take her poem Witchcraft, published in 1901, about a woman who bewitches King Arthur's court. Here's the final stanza.
Once towards the court a woman sped in trailing robes of clinging poppy red, and poppy garlands twined and interwed, deep-eyed and sorrowful, with somber hair sweeping her shoulders like a living thing, and for a moment's folly, even the king felt love's forbidden breath, she was so fair.
Although Lady Margaret Sackville's poetry wasn't what we might think of today as explicitly feminist, many of her poems feature powerful, complicated women, often figures from mythology, like the witch in that poem. In this way, she centered women's stories and encouraged a different perspective on common narratives. This commitment to ensuring women's stories were heard extended to Margaret's work off the page, too. She was passionate about supporting and promoting other women writers, many of whom she recognized didn't benefit from the same class privilege and soapbox that she did. In 1910, Margaret edited the anthology A Book of Verse by Living Women, which gathered the poetry of 26 female writers alongside bibliographies of their work. It served not only as an anthology of the best work by British women poets of the day, but also as a sort of directory pointing readers to where to find more and how to support these writers further. In her introduction to the anthology, Margaret criticized the tendency to overlook or to pigeonhole work by women writers and pointed to the strength of the scene.
To some, women's poetry is a glass reflecting nothing but themselves. Not a still pool of living water wherein the stars and skies are mirrored. Certainly every year brings proof that women's verse is a growing thing.
Interestingly, in a somewhat rare move for a female writer of the early 20th century, Margaret published her work under her own name, rather than using a pseudonym. Notably, she always included her title, Lady Margaret Sackville. Her aristocratic identity meant that it was more socially acceptable for her to be a writer, so including her title on her books protected her against some criticism. But still, openly publishing as a woman was a gently radical act, and her choice to do so may have made it more acceptable for other female writers to do the same. It was one of the most passionate and unlikely love affairs of the 1900s, and for a full century, no one knew it had happened. Now age 32, Lady Margaret Sackville was the glamorous daughter of an earl, an acclaimed poet and widely admired beauty in the top echelons of London society. Ramsay MacDonald was the illegitimate son of a ploughman and a housemaid from Lossiemouth, Scotland. He was 15 years Margaret's senior and a widower. His wife's death 2 years earlier had devastated him and left him alone to care for their 6 children. When Ramsay and Margaret met in 1913, he was a rising star in the Labour Party, serving as an MP for Leicester. Despite, or perhaps because of, their many differences, something ignited between them, a love that was passionate and intense. Although history may remember Ramsay MacDonald primarily as an effective politician, his love letters reveal a sultrier side. Take this passage from a letter 2 years into their relationship.
Do you dream that I come to you? Do I come to you when you are not dreaming? Do I kiss you and lie on your breast? Give me all the news about yourself and your heart and tell me all about your love.
Despite their ardent affection for one another, Ramsay and Margaret loved in secret. He was widowed and she was unmarried, so the affair could have been brought into the light. And indeed, Ramsay proposed 3 times in the 15 years they were attached. We don't know today exactly why Margaret never said yes. Historians have speculated, though, that it was because of their many differences, especially religiously. She was Roman Catholic and he was raised Presbyterian. So the affair remained a secret. Margaret advanced in the world of poetry, while Ramsay advanced in the world of politics, eventually serving as Prime Minister. His letters to her from that time are written on 10 Downing Street embossed notepaper, and one invites her to stay the night at Chequers. Margaret kept every letter. Even after the affair eventually ended in the late 1920s, even after Ramsay died in 1937, she didn't reveal their relationship publicly. Neither married again. Both of them took their love to the grave. It was only when Margaret's stash of Ramsay's letters was found and made public in 2012, a full century after the start of the affair, that we learned the pair were more than friends. None of Margaret's letters to Ramsay have survived through history, but perhaps we can feel some of her private affection for him through her poetry. There is no way to confirm that Ramsay inspired her poem to blank, but, well, judge for yourself what you think.
I cannot love you in the street. I met you in the street once and turned my head away. But I will meet you where the red sunset with forlorn fire flashes the leaping spray. We are too old for all this noise. No wine of such new vintage shall control us who have known what passionate joys once in some far dark city of the soul.
One lasting effect of the affair was on Lady Margaret Sackville's political beliefs and actions. Although her work prior to meeting Ramsay indicates that she was a feminist, her relationship with the MP exposed her to the wider world of politics. Margaret soon became a fervent socialist, a radical position for a member of the aristocracy to take. And when in 1914 fighting broke out in World War I, she passionately committed to pacifism. Margaret joined the anti-war Union of Democratic Control, which Ramsay had helped to found, and vehemently argued for peace through her essays and poetry throughout the war. In 1916, she published The Pageant of War, a collection of explicitly anti-war poems and her most well-known work. Sadly, the collection was informed not only by Margaret's political ideals, but also by personal grief. A year into the war, her brother Gilbert died in action. While Margaret's poetry up to this point had been traditional, romantic, flowery, the atrocities of the war and the death of her brother jolted her into a completely different style. Lady Margaret Sackville's war poetry is direct, biting, and urgent. It stares appalled at the horrors of the battlefield, fixating on the human cost, on death, injury, destruction. In a time when many poets were penning patriotic pieces claiming God and glory on England's side, Margaret's poetry bitterly described the conflict as a grim pageant with no victors, only death. Margaret's Catholicism informed her commitment to pacifism, and many of her war poems imagine the combatants meeting again in a heavenly realm, greeting each other peaceably now that they are free of the earthly obsession with war. Here is the close of her poem, The Return.
They walked no longer foe and foe, but brother bound to brother. Poor men, common men, they walked friendly to one another. Just as in life they might have done, who stabbed and slew instead. So quietly and evenly they walked these million gentle dead.
Interestingly, Margaret's pacifism put her at odds with many of her comrades in the suffrage movement. Many feminists at the time supported World War I because they believed their patriotism in their country's crisis period would help them to get the vote. Lady Margaret Sackville, however, vehemently opposed this position, which she perceived to be a betrayal to the feminist movement and to what was morally right. Several of the poems in The Pageant of War condemn those women who supported the war effort, including the poem she is best known for today, Nostra Culpa, Latin for Our Fault. The poem frames women during wartime as directly culpable for the deaths of the soldiers. Their passivity, or worse, active support of the war effort, leaving them with blood on their hands.
we knew, this thing at least we knew, the worth of life. This was our secret learned at birth. We knew that force the world had deified, how weak it is. We spoke not, so men died. Upon a world down trampled, blood defiled, fearing that men should praise us less, we smiled.
The poem ends with the damning line, "We mothers and we murderers of mankind." These pieces were controversial in their time, but have endured as the most famous of Sackville's work, holding up for modern readers as powerful, gripping examples of war poetry. Lady Margaret Sackville left an impressive legacy in English literature through her poetry alone, but that wasn't the only contribution that she made. She consistently used her considerable influence to support the literary community. At age 28, Margaret helped to set up and became the first president of the Poetry Recital Society in London. 3 years later, under her leadership, it evolved into the Poetry Society, which of course is still around today as one of the most important poetry organizations in the UK and worldwide. After World War I, Margaret moved up to Edinburgh. From 1930, she lived on Regent Terrace, in the shade of Calton Hill, in one of the beautiful houses designed a century earlier by William Playfair. She continued her work advocating for writers by serving Scottish Pen, the organization committed to defending freedom of expression, and was appointed its first president. Margaret was also elected a Fellow of the Royal Society of Literature and was active in the literary salons of the city. In addition to all of this advocacy work, Margaret also expressed her love for her adopted home by writing about it. She was skilled not only in poetry, but also drama, and in 1922 she published A Mask of Edinburgh. The play describes the dramatic and lengthy history of the city in 11 scenes, including the touching moment when a young Walter Scott met his hero, Robert Burns. Lady Margaret Sackville died in Cheltenham in 1963, at the age of 81. She had continued writing into her later years, releasing her final book, Quatrains and Other Poems, at age 78. Frustratingly, much of her work has faded into obscurity today. It's very difficult for today's readers to access her books or reliable information about her life. Recently, though, the centennial of World War I has focused welcome attention on Margaret's powerful war poetry, giving it the recognition it deserves within the canon. In 2022, Historic Environment Scotland has proposed that a plaque be installed in Lady Margaret Sackville's honour. This plaque would celebrate not only her creative legacy as a prolific and significant poet, but also her work supporting other writers and advocating for peace. That's all for this episode of Building Stories. For more episodes, and to learn more about the ongoing effort to make historically significant women more visible in Edinburgh, please visit www.cityofliterature.com. This podcast is produced by I Am Loud Productions. It was commissioned by Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. Thank you so much for listening.